Howdy, friends, and welcome in to the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of the SI Fan Nation Network. I am your host, Jess Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native who has very interesting and peculiar ties to TCU. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, JD Andrus, who seems to co-host every podcast that Killer Frogs has. Last week, he had to take the lead on this one. And this is episode 4 of our show covering TCU football and a smattering of other topics related to TCU football. It is Tuesday, the 6th of August at the time of recording. And JD, I need to ask, did you miss me?
You know, I did. Forty and I agreed a little too much for my liking. I didn't like it. I needed a little bit of someone to push back on.
Yeah, and please, I would like to shout out Tory Couch for stepping in. The plan was for me to join y'all last week, and kind of last minute, we had to go ahead and nix that idea. Basic info for our listeners, day job got in the way. That's all I'll say about that. But shout out, Tory. Thank you so much. You guys, you know, yes, you both agreed a lot. But no, it was a great show. I enjoyed listening to it and breaking it down. And so just quick rundown of what we're going to do. So first off the top of the show, I'm going to go ahead and respond to y'all's show from last week, because I was actually bummed I couldn't join last week and speak my piece. Then we have a couple of commitments from the last 2 weeks that we needed to break down and talk about. Then some news out of Baylor, actually, that we need to go ahead and talk about. And then next week there will be news similar to that regarding another former coach, and we'll have plenty to talk about that next week. And then JD will wrap us up with some injury updates from fall camp before the season starts. JD, it's funny that you just brought up that you and Tory always seem to agree a little too much on stuff, because I was thinking about this while I was listening to last week's show that I missed, and you and I have kind of two different perspectives. You are very much, you are definitely an eye test guy, but you lean a lot more into the statistics of the game and of these players. I am absolutely the eye test guy. You know, I will read the statistics, but at the end of the day, those stats don't mean a whole lot to me. It's how I see their composure and how they're acting on the field, how they're reading the opposing team's defense or offense, and how they're reacting to the play. That's where I lean more. And so I enjoyed listening to you and Tory, but a lot of what y'all said, and I won't take long on this at all, because y'all spoke a lot of truth. Obviously, Ken Seals has a lot of experience, having been at Vanderbilt for 2 years. And I believe he had 22, 23 games played under his belt. And, you know, not the most staggering numbers. But for me, the eye test guy, you know, I really, really like Ken Seals. And I know that y'all both put Josh Hoover at one. The thing for me is, Hoover came in after Morris last year got off to a really, really rough start. And, you know, the way I see it is that he had a season that was just better than Morris. And that's why I think he is the favorite to come into the number one quarterback job. I fully expect that to happen. I'm not saying that I'm calling that Sonny Dykes is going to put Ken Seals at number one. However, I would say that I would really like to see Ken Seals as QB1 at the start of the season. Now, I don't think it's going to happen. But as I've seen all three of the quarterbacks y'all talked about last week with my own eyes, Josh Hoover, Ken Seals, and Hoss Haney. And as far as my eye test goes, I really like Ken Seals. I like his composure. I think he's going to come into this Briles offense really, really well. He didn't have the tools around him at Vandy in a tougher conference. Let's be honest, in a much tougher conference with tougher competition. And I think that that exposure and that experience for him, having seen him and having known, I have a little bit of bias because I know the Seals family, and he's a Parker County boy coming from Weatherford. But I really like Ken Seals. I like his composure, his positivity. Y'all were talking about Josh Hoover being a leader in the locker room last year. There's no doubt in my mind that if Ken Seals got the job, he would be that kind of leader that is needed on the offensive side of the ball, and not even just on the offensive side of the ball, but as a team player as well. I definitely saw that when he was at Weatherford High School. Again, different level, but he is just a natural leader. And finally, now, Haas Haney, I was never going to say that he needed to be QB1. I want that on the record. I know I hyped him up. I know I'm wearing my Alito hat for those who are actually watching this podcast. I might be showing just a little bit of bias. I think it would be totally ridiculous to put Haas Haney as QB1 starting week one. And I apologize to the Haney family who lets me work at their place every now and then. I totally think that Haas is going to – I expect a redshirt year. You brought up the Long Island game. That's probably the only game I can see him getting some solid reps. And, you know, maybe even then, I don't think they're going to let him unleash like he would like to. But you also brought up packages. Ken Seals would be great in the red zone offense for sure, even if he's not QB1. But Haas Haney opens up a little bit of an option offense if you want to take that route because he's so fast. So I think all three of them have their biggest weapon. For me, though, just with the experience and the leadership that I know he's capable of, I would like to see Ken Seals as QB1 this season. Now, again, don't think it's going to happen, but that's just that's just my two cents on the quarterback conversation. Would you like to respond to that at all?
Just slightly. One, the numbers background is actually because I was a math and economics double major in college. So I am a big, big proponent of the numbers do not lie, and they will tell you the full story if you look at them enough. So that's why I'm a big numbers guy. Anyways, I think there's a lot of it. I understand the Seals eye test, but my understanding is especially in the current day of age, like and with how players are quick to transfer out, like Hoover's still a good enough quarterback that I think a lot of it is relies on the coaching staff being like, if you come in and have a quarterback like Ken Seals come in, take the position of Hoover, who played extremely well at the end of the stretch against very tough competition. He played Texas, he played Oklahoma. Like he played tough competition. And then, you know, now you have a player that's going to transfer out. And then now you're relying on, well, you got Ken Seals next year and you got Haas with the year of development. And then you got Scoble, who we're going to talk about. Like, yeah, there's maybe some guys back there, but Ken Seals is pretty much here to stay. I don't see him transferring back out. Hoover could potentially transfer out. And so I think it's a little bit of protection for themselves and why Hoover is getting the nod right now. And everything from camp that we have seen with Sonny and watching them during the team portion has just been, it is Hoover's offense. And, you know, maybe I don't even think, I'd say it's a less than 10% chance that they're even battling for the position, quote unquote, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's completely fair. I totally think that this is Josh Hoover's spot right now, and it's Ken Seals to have to earn and take from him. I'm completely with y'all on that one. However, and you even alluded to it as well. If something happened to Hoover, you said last week that you wouldn't act like it's doomsday, right? You'd be like, okay, we got a guy here, it's next man up, and I would fully trust Ken Seals doing that. However, I stand by my argument. I would rather see Ken Seals as at starting quarterback. Again, I don't think it's going to happen, but I really trust that kid. I like what he brings to the table. I think he'd be a fantastic quarterback. Now, you brought up Adam Scoble. So we're going to go into a little recruiting talk real quick, unless you'd like to add one more thing.
No, I'm good. I've said my piece.
All right. So two big commitments last week announced on X, formerly Twitter. Number one was Adam Scoble, the quarterback out of Columbus, Texas, way down south. And again, as I forewarned, I'm a big eye test guy. Now, his numbers, especially for 3A ball, are pretty phenomenal. He has not thrown for under 2,400 yards in three high school seasons, and he's got one more. I mean, as a freshman, this kid threw for 2,440 yards and 28 touchdowns. He's got a career record in high school of just over 7,600 yards and 94 touchdowns through the air and only 8 interceptions. And, you know, 3A ball is a little different, but I really like this kid. I like his composure. He stands tall in the pocket. He's a solid runner if need be. I really like this pickup. And of course, you know, he comes from TCU family legacy. I mean, his father, Matt, was a tight end who went on to play for the Bengals and the Eagles. His uncle Aaron was a defensive end, went on to play for the Buffalo Bills for 7 or 8 years. He's got a cousin who's a class of 25, who's an edge linebacker that, let me check this. I'm not sure if he has committed yet.
Yes, he has.
But I know he's a solid. He has. Okay, yeah, he has. Yeah, that's a big pickup right there. And especially when you realize that he was committed to Baylor. And having worked for a Baylor site for the past year, I've gotten to watch a lot of film of him. I have unfortunately not gotten the chance to see him yet in person. I'm hoping that's something I can rectify this upcoming high school football season, as high school football is kind of my area of expertise. But from what I see about this kid, I like him. And if any TCU fans are down south and close to Columbus, or you see they're going to be rolling through your town, go check this kid out. And especially because just for entertainment point, he is now joined by Grayson Rigdon, who's a six-man football legend, and playing his first year of 11-man and already committed to Air Force. So there's going to be a dynamic backfield there in Columbus. But Adam Scoble is absolutely the anchor of that Columbus Cardinals offense. And you look up the film, look up his numbers. I think this is a great pickup. But as you mentioned, JD, just the way things are with the transfer portal, I mean, how is this going to go? I'm really curious to see. You know, we can talk about him, be excited all we want, but once he gets here, what's the quarterback room going to look like?
First of all, Scoble is also the number 19 quarterback in the country for the 2025 class. And let me talk about my numbers a little bit. TCU fans are upset about Ty Hawkins, who is fluctuates between 5 to 10. Like, when you go from, let's say he's 8 to 19th, yeah, it seems like a pretty big drop. But, like, the differences are minor. At that point, it's you got to prove it on the field. It's not like we're going from a number 8 quarterback in the country recruit to the number 75. Like, Scoble is going to be a great signing. And then even to take it from Baylor is just one step better, right? Everyone loves that. But I think, you know, when you look into the quarterback class or quarterback room for next year, I think you're seeing a lot of, hey, like, Scoble probably gets a redshirt year. At that point, Ken Seals has 1 year left after that. Who knows? I doubt he transfers out. Maybe Hoover has a big blow-up season this season and then transfers out. He's only going into year two this season. It's a weird time in college football. You can't be like, hey, like, we've got a deep quarterback class, because all of a sudden you can look up and you've got no one. So, but I think between Haas and Scoble, one of them will end up sticking it all the way through.
Yeah, I completely agree. And quite frankly, I mean, you know, I'm going to show my bias just a little bit. I think Haas is the right answer between the two, but you know, wouldn't be doomsday if it was Scoble that you were left with. I mean, he's a fantastic quarterback. Again, something I hope to rectify this upcoming season is that I hope I get a chance to see him in person, and then I can come on and report back to y'all about that. And then the other one was came from a local kid from South Lake Carroll, Brady Boyd. He is a – I'm sorry, not Brady Boyd. Brock Boyd. Brady Boyd is at Texas Tech. Brock Boyd, the wide receiver at South Lake Carroll. His brother Brady is a wide receiver at Tech. Brady is someone that I think is really, really slept on as a wide receiver. We can talk, you know, again, I can go into high school football and just talk about the legacy of South Lake Carroll as a whole. But, you know, you play one season, catch 57 passes for 797 yards and 7 touchdowns for one of the top programs in the state of Texas. That's a big deal. He doesn't have a lot of offers. I think his only other massive offer was from Boston College. And so, his offer from TCU came about mid-season a year ago, I believe. And, I was questioning to see, because I know he would like to join his brother at Texas Tech. But he ends up committing to TCU. He's staying local. Solid kid, big, nice measurables. He's pretty tall, pretty big. Makes cuts in open field. He can run over defensive backs if he has the room to do it. This is a big pickup. And I'm sorry, I got that wrong. I see offers from Arizona and Baylor here as well on my notes. But definitely slept on as a wide receiver. I think that a lot of programs in the SEC and the ACC, whatever you want to throw out there, they're missing out on this kid. Now he does still have some time. He's a class of 26, so he won't be coming to TCU for at least the next couple years. But again, as a sophomore, you put up those numbers and no one's really giving him a chance at the moment. Right now, 247 Sports has him as a 3-star. This is a big, big pickup. And if TCU can keep selling for these next 2 years and hold on to him, that's going to be huge, especially with the quarterback room that we've talked about.
Also, not to overly correct you, but I just want to fact check myself too. I'm sure Brock Boyd is a 4-star on 24/7, and also with offers from Nebraska, Baylor, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, Oregon, and Tech. So I just want to make sure that.
Okay, you're right. You're right. I'm looking at the 247 composite right now. Yeah, so that's correct. And he's the 45th ranked wide receiver, 39th in the state of Texas, and that's just going to go up because he's so young.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a big pickup, and if we can hold him.
Yeah, that's ultimately why I just brought that up. It's just because it makes it that bigger of a deal that you're able to get a recruit like this. Malcolm Kelly is obviously a first class wide receivers coach around the country as well. He knows how to recruit guys. He knows how to develop them. And Brock Boyd said that. He said that was part of the reason why he came here. Also, shout out to the X/Twitter burners. You are also part of the reason that Brock Boyd is here. He said that himself, that he was tired of the burners tweeting at him, and so he just committed to TCU. So absolutely love that from everyone who's out there putting in the work, that no one knows who you are, but it helps every second. But yeah, I think Boyd's a great pickup. He kind of reminds me of a current day Jack Besh, who's on campus right now, with just the way he plays. He's not going to blow you away with the speed, but he's athletic and physical enough that he can will over any catch.
Yeah, completely agree. And I expect to see him at South Lake Carroll. At least, you know, I'm obviously closer to South Lake Carroll than I am to Columbus, Texas, so there's a better chance I end up seeing Boyd than I end up seeing Scoble. So
yeah,
hopefully I can see him and report back on with my eye test capabilities. But that's really it for the two biggest recruits that we have. Obviously, you know, this season we're going to keep our eyes on that and keep diving into anyone who commits, and maybe next week or the week, you know, we still have 3 weeks before the season starts. We'll do a deep dive into the class that we have coming in after the season. Maybe we'll toss that idea around. But JD, you and I texted, and you and I don't really text outside of the show, but you and I texted the other day about some news that came just down south in Waco, that Gary Patterson has left Baylor before he can even be a consultant for an actual game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm conflicted. At one point, I wanted him to still be on the roster for a potential chance of him to coach against TCU, just to kind of see what that would be like on the 10-year anniversary of the 2014 game. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad to see Gary Patterson not in green and gold, which technically we never did. But Nolan, correct me if I'm wrong, but from my understanding and everything I've read, is he was only on a 100-day contract when he signed with Baylor.
I believe that's correct. I think Aranda wanted him around for spring ball and kind of some advice on the NIL, because I know that Dave Aranda wanted to put a lot of emphasis on NIL and trying to get more guys to come to Waco. I think that may have just been the whole thing, but that was ultimately something that I thought was going to turn into a season-long thing. So I was actually shocked by the news, even though knowing that it was only agreed he'd be around for a short time. That was something that I thought for sure was going to be extended.
I'm still kind of conflicted on why he let him go. I just don't understand the reasoning. And I mean, why do you need Gary Patterson for NIL when you just wear shirts in practice to say we paid players and you still have a pretty bad recruiting class? But don't, you know what? Let me digress.
That might have been Gary Patterson's idea.
Maybe he was working to just kind of deceive Baylor the entire time, just as the last hurrah to TCU. Yeah.
So apparently it was a mutual agreement. It was a relationship that I got to credit Mac Engel at the 4-Star Telegram for his article, said it was just a relationship that, quote, wasn't working. So I, having spent the past year working around Dave Aranda and the coaches at Baylor, I can see the differences. Now, granted, I've never really worked that close with Gary Patterson, But just from an outside perspective of knowing what Patterson's like, I can see why that might have been the case. That's a relation that just isn't going to work. So I can't speak. Everything I've read, I haven't gotten a serious answer. Now, apparently, Coach Patterson gave an answer on the ESPN show, Central Texas show, that ended up in a quote in the Dallas Morning News, and Dallas Morning News threw up a paywall, so I couldn't read it. But he gave a reason why it didn't work out, and I unfortunately didn't get a chance to read it. But yeah, I have to think it's that way. They're two completely different people, and I'm sure that Patterson gave Aranda a lot of advice that Aranda is going to take, but that was definitely not a partnership that I saw working for a very long time. Now, I did at least think they'd get through one season. That's what shocks me so much about this.
Yeah, I will tell you this, though. I wish I could have been a fly in the room and listen to Dave Aranda and Gary Patterson talk defense for a little bit, because that's two geniuses meeting right there. But, you know, based off everything I know from Dave Aranda at his time at LSU when I was 70 minutes down the road at college, and what I know of Gary Patterson, of course, like they were very conflicting about, one, how they handled their locker room, how they coached their players. So, I mean, it does make somewhat sense to me, but at the same time, Nolan, if Aranda gets fired midseason, who takes over now? Just, you know, throwing mud at a wall and seeing what sticks.
And then, no, it's going to be Jake Spavital, the offensive coordinator they just hired in the offseason. That's who it's going to be. And you look at Baylor. I mean, what struggled worse for Baylor this year than their offense? Their defense made quite a few good stands in some of their games. The offense really couldn't get anything clicking. Yeah, and so I think that if go ahead, Duff. No, make your point.
No, I was just saying they were just bottom third. I just don't understand, because none of the coaches they brought in just are head coaches, right? Like, they're not head coach hires that you're comfortable with being like, you know what, if we fire Aranda, like, Spavital to me doesn't stand out as, if we fire Aranda, then I'm cool with him leading my team for this season and taking over the reins of recruiting.
See, but you make an interesting point, but when we talk about Baylor, it's going to have to be that complete 180. Again, having spent time around there, I mean, it's just the morale has – you know, I'm convinced morale around Baylor has been low pretty much the school's entire existence when it comes to sports. And I really struggle to think it's been any lower. We are not far removed from Baylor winning the Big 12 championship. And then they just had a really awful year this past year. And so I'm not convinced that Spavital wouldn't be the option if Aranda gets fired, at least for the end of the season. Now, is he someone that I would look to hire as my head coach at a Power Four conference program now? No, he's not. But that they didn't bring him on to be head coach. They brought him on to be offensive coordinator. And if the offense gets clicking, even if Baylor loses their first six games, I think that if Aranda gets fired, it's going to be Spavital that gets the interim role at least to finish out the season.
Yeah, I mean I mean, I guess, you know, when you get what you have at Baylor, you kind of just take it and roll with it. But I guess my point is would you rather have, you know, would you rather not have Gary Patterson kind of taking over the reins over anyone else?
Yeah. My question is how the Baylor faithful was actually going to respond to that. You know, I know that even when he got hired as a consultant, you know, the message board I was running, there were a lot of mixed emotions about that. And so I don't know how the Baylor faithful react if Gary Patterson had to step in as head coach. Now, Spavital does have a record as head coach, and it's not stellar. He was at Texas State from 2019 to 2022, went 13-35. I mean, really just a horrible, horrible tenure at Texas State. But, you know, since then he was the OC at Cal last year, and Cal wasn't horrible last year. I'll give him that. They weren't great, but they weren't horrible. But now he steps into Baylor, and he steps into a quarterback room that, frankly, for Baylor, I think is a pretty good quarterback room. So we'll see what he can do. But yeah, if Aranda gets fired, I think Spavital is the easy choice. But yes, I agree with you. I would rather have Gary Patterson on my consultant staff or coaching staff to have that happen. But, you know, I think that that would have just been – I think that actually may have been worse for Baylor had they done that, because I think the two's coaching styles are completely different. Now, those are two, as you said, defensive geniuses. But the way that they go about the game and they handle practices, and, I mean, we hear reports about it all the time. You know, yeah, we heard about it all the time when Patterson was at TCU. And, you know, I would say in the exact opposite way, you never hear anything about how Aranda is in the locker room or anything, because he's very timid. He's very calm, right? Patterson would get in your face and correct you when you're wrong. And, you know, we saw that, and reports would come out of, oh, Patterson was being a little too aggressive in the locker room with players or something. Or maybe he, I'm not going to mention the specific scandal, but he said something stupid, maybe, you know, like, you know, Patterson was that kind of flamboyant in your face kind of coach. Dave Aranda's not that guy. Dave Aranda's very timid. He holds it back. I can tell you just from sitting in press conferences with Dave Aranda, man, I mean, do I think he's a great mind? Absolutely. But I would have a tough time suiting up and playing 60 minutes of a football game for a man that really doesn't fire me up at all.
Yeah. I mean, they're just such, they're such major differences that it's just like, I don't think Baylor faithful would care if Gary Patterson beat TCU at Baylor. They'd forgive him for everything, because then it would just be even more bittersweet to them. And I think, you know, I'm glad that I don't have to live through that nightmare of watching Gary Patterson in green and gold coaching against TCU.
Yeah, I bet you are. But again, I go back to my point that I kind of got off track and didn't quite finish. I think that would just be even more detrimental to Baylor if that was the case, because you go from that one extreme of a coach to the very next extreme of the coach in the middle of a season, when if Aranda is fired, you're probably already in a losing season that you can't really salvage. I mean, I said it all last year. After the Texas State opening loss, I said Baylor's going to be lucky if they make the Independence Bowl in Shreveport. Like, they really would be, and they would have been. And, you know, they played Long Island at home last year, and they won, but it wasn't a pretty win by any means. And so, Aranda's on the hot seat. And, I'm kind of with you on that. Seeing Patterson in green and gold, even as an OU fan as I am, that something just would not sit right in my heart about that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of coaches like that. But I'm sure it's also how SMU fans felt seeing Sonny Dykes in purple and white and purple and black. Like, it was odd to them, right?
We can save that for when the Iron Skillet game rolls around at the end of September.
Hey, that sounds good to me.
Well, all right, JD. We've had it's been fairly quick, but we've had a pretty good show so far. But you have been at camp this week. I unfortunately have not been able to. We have you alluded before we started the show to me that there might be some injury updates. So what do you have for us on that?
Yes, there have been 6 TCU practices so far in this fall camp. I have been at 5 out of the 6, talking with the coaches right there with the players on the sidelines. A few things before I get into the injuries. Players look way better this fall camp than they do last year. Sonny Dykes has talked about it. The players have talked about it. There's way more energy, way more excitement during the practice along the sideline. It's like last fall camp, they were playing real tight. They were coming off a national championship loss, blowout, whatever you want to call it. They were just coming off of that a little bit tight. And then now this season, you're kind of seeing them loose. Like, they're having fun. They're out there. And they're flying around. They look good in camp. There's still a few position battles going on, especially at the center position between James Brockmeyer and Colton Deary. They are still battling it out. Sonny Dykes actually said last night that he expects both of them to be on the starting line, particularly because the injury that was finally released yesterday and then came out today from the player himself is Cade Bennett, the San Diego State transfer who was expected to be the starting offensive guard this season. Sonny Dykes said last night that he was found out that he was having disc issues in the offseason. They did an MRI and ended up finding out that he needed surgery. Cade Bennett himself said that he would try to play through the injury, and the coaching staff shut it down and said, let's just you know, don't worry about it this year. You'll get a medical redshirt, and then he'll still have 2 years of eligibility. So Cade Bennett, who was projected to be the starting, I believe it was left guard is the open one, will be out for the season, which is a pretty big blow for an offensive line that was already trying to piece it together. And then two injuries that are not confirmed for how long they will be out are very, very, very big news injuries. Vernon Glover, the starting outside cornerback, and also Avery Helm, the other outside starting cornerback, are both, were both at practice yesterday wearing knee braces. Sonny Dykes said within 48 to 72 hours, they will have an update on their health. I can tell you right now, I don't think Vernon Glover is going to be back the rest of the season. I think he's most likely done. Avery Helm, I would, if you know, I had to give a prediction, I say he's probably fine by the time season rolls around.
So why do you, just from your perspective, why do you think that's the case? Why do you think one will be ready by season start and the other's probably done?
I saw both injuries. That's all I will say. I don't want to say anymore.
Say no more. Well, that's going to be a massive, massive loss to the Horned Frog secondary, if that is in fact the case, especially with the schedule that we have coming up. So yeah, that's hopefully when that news comes out, we can report back to our listeners that it wasn't as bad as we expected. But fall camp will roll on. Hopefully, I'll be able to make one. If not this week, next week. JD, I know you'll be at quite a few more. And hopefully I can actually get to meet you in person finally and not over Zoom. But anything else to add, man, before we wrap this one up and close it out for the week?
No, I think, we're getting closer and closer. The basics are pretty much starting to get done with fall camp. Soon, by beginning of next week, is when they start planning to start installing game plans. And then they'll get into Stanford pregame prep. And, you know, we're 2 weeks away from week zero, basically. Like, I am pumped. I can't wait.
I love it. It's my favorite time of year. And, for me, it starts next week because I do my high school sports coverage. And first week of scrimmages, my first scrimmage is next Thursday up in Springtown. So shout out to the Springtown Porcupines out there in Parker County. Frog fans, that's going to do it for the fourth episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of the Killer Frogs Fan Nation page. Thank you for tuning in and listening or watching, however you find your podcasts. We'll see you next week with another great show. Until then, for my partner JD Andres and everybody at Killer Frogs, I am Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.
Thanks, guys.